Taxes is a four-letter word. You're getting sleepy. Abstinence only really works. You're getting sleepy. My boyfriend and I have no right to get married, teach school, adopt a child, or serve our country, and I'm not gay. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll scream like a chicken and vote Republican. Evolution is just a theory. You're getting sleepy. Creationism is a science. Sleepy. John Calvin is an important historical thinker. And Thomas Jefferson, well, not so much. Now, when I count to three and snap my fingers, you will laugh uncontrollably and vote Republican. Sarah Palin is a real feminist. You're getting drowsy. Sarah Palin is a real anything. You're almost comatose. I am you.
And like you, I've dabbled in witchcraft, paid my mortgage with campaign contributions, believe that masturbation is adultery, have heard the audible voice of God saying the word credibility, I'm running for a seat in the U.S. Senate, and I count on the support of mice with fully functioning human brains.
Now when I count to three, Republican. Rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. Terrorists hate our freedom. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. That's why we must give up our freedom. Blastocytes have human rights. Goldman Sachs has got our backs. Carbon dioxide is a natural byproduct of nature. Michelle Bachmann, sleepy, sleepy. The governor of California should be chosen by using eBay's Buy It Now button. Ronald Reagan should have won an Oscar for Wildcats of the Navy and for his presidency. Government of the corporation, by the corporation, and for the corporation shall not perish from this earth. So when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll go back, 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 and vote Republican. You're getting sleepy. Vote Republican. You're getting sleepy. And you're going off the rails on a crazy train.
Welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can hear us at axissacramento.org, or you can download this program and previous programs at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com, or to find out about new programs, friend us at Facebook. Today's program is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Senior Attorney at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Kennedy was in San Francisco to promote The Last Mountain, a new film that features his efforts to end mountaintop removal coal mining in West Virginia. Dirty fuels should be forced to cover their full costs. Kennedy says not only could they not compete in the market, renewable energy would win. Kennedy argues our democracy is broken and the campaign finance system is a system of legalized bribery.
How will we power our future? Can we create a healthy and clean economy? Climate One at the Commonwealth Club is at the forefront of the global debate about energy, economy, and the environment. Bringing together the brightest and most provocative leaders of our time, Climate One is the place where big ideas get heard. With thoughtful and insightful discussions on policy, business, science, and culture, Climate One founder Greg Dalton gets to the heart of the matter. It's our future. It's time to come together.
Welcome to Climate One at the Commonwealth Club. I'm Greg Dalton. Flick on a light switch in the United States, and chances are you'll be poking your finger into a coal mine somewhere in the country. about half of the nation's electricity is supplied by coal, thanks in part to policies from the 1970s that favor the abundant American source of energy. But coal is also among the dirtiest fossil fuels and a major source of carbon pollution that is driving global weirding. Should the United States move away from coal to cleaner power? Should it make coal itself cleaner? One of coal's biggest critics is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., noted author, attorney, and environmental advocate. He's featured in the new documentary film, The Last Mountain, which depicts the lives of people in the coal mining towns of Appalachia. For the next hour, Mr. Kennedy and our live audience in San Francisco will discuss the extraction and combustion of coal, as well as broader national energy issues. So please welcome Robert F. Kennedy to the Commonwealth Club. Thank you for coming. So a lot of the preference for coal goes back to the 1970s when American policies sort of gave deliberate preference to a U.S. source of energy. A lot of presidents have promised energy independence. They haven't delivered it yet. What do you think America should do for a comprehensive national energy policy?
Well, you know, for 27 years, I've been an environmental advocate for 27 years, and for 27 years I've had the same answer to that question, which is free market capitalism. People say to me, what's the most important environmental law that we could pass? And I would say, I've always said the same thing. It's free market capitalism, because in a true free market promotes efficiency. And efficiency means the elimination of waste. And pollution is waste. And a true free market would encourage us to properly value our natural resources. And it is the undervaluation of those resources that causes us to use them wastefully. But in a true free market, you can't make yourself rich without making your neighbors rich and without enriching your community. But what polluters do is they make themselves rich by making everybody else poor. They raise standards of living for themselves by lowering quality of life for everybody else. And they do that by escaping the discipline of the free market. You show me a polluter, I'll show you a subsidy. I'll show you a fat cat using political clout to escape the discipline of the free market and force the public to pay his production costs. And coal claims to be cheap, but actually it's probably the most catastrophically expensive way to boil a pot of water that has ever been devised. If I spend a lot of time in West Virginia over the past 2.5 decades. I had a 6.5 week jury trial in West Virginia about a year and a half ago, and I won the biggest judgment in the history of the state. I was back in the state about 3 months ago arguing the appeal of that judgment before the West Virginia Supreme Court. And as I was leaving the state, I was driving on a highway that felt like I was driving on a cushion. It was so soft, it was almost like a skateboard park. And that's very unusual in West Virginia. West Virginia is the 49th poorest state. My father used to say, you know, coal claims to be bringing prosperity to the state, but it's got a state with the richest resources in our country, but it has the 49th poorest people. And coal has brought poverty and destruction and a disability and dysfunction to the state, not prosperity. But good roads are hard to find in West Virginia. And I asked the driver, why does it feel like we're driving on a cushion? He said, because there's 22 inches of asphalt on this road. And the reason I knew the Massachusetts Turnpike is 4 to 6 inches. The New York State Thruway is 6 to 8 inches. Every inch of asphalt costs the taxpayer millions of dollars. And I knew the reason they had 22 inches of asphalt, because the coal trucks weigh 90,000 pounds and they'll pulverize less robust roads. So when coal says the coal industry is not paying for that 22 inches of asphalt, and that road has to be repaired every 4 years. Whereas a regular highway has to be repaired every 20 years. So, and it's not the coal industry that's paying that bill. It's you and I, the taxpayer. So coal says it's cheap. They say we're only 11 cents a kilowatt hour. But they're not telling you you're also paying for those 3,000 miles of coal roads in West Virginia. That's coming out of a different pocket. Last year, the National Academy of Sciences said that a 10-year study they completed that showed that every single freshwater fish in America now has dangerous levels of mercury in its flesh. That mercury is coming from coal-burning power plants. One out of every 6 American women now have so much mercury in her womb from eating those fish and from other vectors that her children are at a grim risk for a grim inventory of diseases: autism, blindness, mental retardation, heart, liver, and kidney disease. I have so much mercury in my body. I got my levels tested recently, and I fish a lot, and I eat the fish. My levels are 10 times what EPA considers safe. And I was told by Dr. David Carpenter, who is the National Authority on Mercury Contamination, that a woman with my levels of mercury in her blood would have children with cognitive impairment, with permanent brain injury. Well, today, according to CDC, there are 647,000 children born in this country every year who've been exposed to dangerous levels of mercury in their mother's wombs. That's a cost on our country that they don't tell you about when they say, oh, it's only 11 cents a kilowatt hour. Last week, Harvard published a study, a peer-reviewed study by Paul Epstein, that showed the cost of coal from the cost of health impacts to our national health system just from ozone and particulates is $345 billion a year. And that's part of the cost of burning coal. 10 million asthma attacks a year, a million lost work days. I live 2 hours south of the Adirondack Mountains. This is the oldest protected wilderness on the face of the earth. Generations of Americans had the rightful expectation that they would be able to enjoy those landscapes unspoiled. But today, one-fifth of the lakes in the Adirondacks is sterilized, dead from acid rain, which has also destroyed the forest cover on the high peaks of the Appalachians from Georgia to northern Quebec. The movie screening starts at 7:30 tonight down the road, so I don't want to say, and many of the people who are here are going to that, and I'm not going to repeat anything that I say here. And those of you who see the movie will see what's happened, which is that this industry has, over the past 10 years, they've cut down the 500 biggest mountains in West Virginia. They've flattened an area of Appalachia larger than the state of Delaware. If you filled 25 feet of a Hudson River stream, we would put you in jail. If you blew up a mountain in the Sierras up here, or in Utah or Colorado or the Berkshires, or in Appalachia, you would go to jail or you'd be put someplace for the criminally insane. But in Appalachia, they're able to cut down 500 mountains, and it's all illegal. And they've been able to bury not 25 feet of streams, but 2,500 miles of rivers and streams. And they do it by subverting democracy. This is, and by hiding what they're doing from the public. Because what they're doing is illegal. You saw me ask Bill Rainey, who's the head of the Coal Association, and I asked the same thing in a debate last year with the head of the CEO of Massey Coal. I said to him, you've had, by your own records, 67,000 violations in 5 years and tens of thousands of violations of other mining and safety laws. Can you make a profit in your industry without breaking the law? And he said no. He acknowledged he does operate a criminal enterprise. His business plan is to break the law and then to disable, to subvert democracy so that the law is not enforced against him. And that destruction of democracy is another cost of coal that they don't tell you about when they say it's only 11 cents a kilowatt hour. We give to the oil industry $1.3 trillion in subsidies every year. If you don't believe that figure, look at Terry Tamminen's new book, Lives Per Gallon, which Terry Tamminen just stepped down as head of California EPA, and he has meticulously and scrupulously inventoried the vast raft of subsidies that we give to oil every year. This is the richest industry in the history of the world. We borrow $1 billion a day in our country. People talk about the trade imbalance with China. Well, that's nothing compared to the trade imbalance with the oil countries. We borrow $1 billion a day, mainly from nations that don't share our values, in order to import $1 billion of oil a day. A lot, again, largely from nations that don't share our values. And this hemorrhage of $750 billion annually of American wealth has beggared a nation that, when I was a little boy, owned half the wealth on the face of the planet. Our deadly addiction to carbon is the principal drag on American capitalism. Now, in last year in November, Lord David Putnam gave a speech before Parliament. When Parliament was debating a cap and trade system that's very similar, but actually much tougher than the one that we passed in Congress, and then that was defeated in the Senate, and it was the mainstay of President Obama's national energy policy. And to its credit, Parliament ultimately passed that bill. But there, in our country, half the people don't believe that global warming exists because of, and I was talking to somebody a few minutes ago, they said, why is that? Well, it's because the propaganda works. And Exxon and Koch brothers have spent $200 million erecting phony think tanks and filling them with these phony scientists who we call biostitutes and employing these slick PR firms to persuade the American public that global warming doesn't exist, and propaganda works. Joseph Goebbels used to say, talk about the big lie. If you tell it again and again and again, ultimately people will believe it. And that's what's happening. But in Great Britain, they haven't experienced that. People generally accept the science. They understand that it's a grim reality that government has to take a strong hand in enforcing. And ultimately, Parliament passed the bill. But there's still vested interest in other people in England who said that, we have to move incrementally. We have to move slowly, because if we move precipitously, it's going to cause grave dislocations in the marketplace and our economy. That's going to impede our ability to address this and other issues. It's going to be bad for our country. And Lord Putnam reminded Parliament that exactly 200 years before, the same body had debated the abolition of the slave trade. And at that time, everybody in England believed that slavery was an abomination, a moral catastrophe that had to be abolished. But people said, how do we do it? Because slavery represented 25% of the GNP of Great Britain. It was the principal source of energy for the entire British Empire. And they said, if we abolish it outright, the economy is going to crater. But after a year of debate, Parliament made the moral choice and abolished slavery literally overnight. And instead of collapsing, the British economy exploded as thousands of entrepreneurs rushed into that space to create new forms of energy, mainly mechanical ones, in an era that we now know as the Industrial Revolution, which was the greatest epic in wealth creation in the history of mankind. And the abolition of the slave trade had exposed all of these hidden inefficiencies that were associated with free human bondage. Well, today, we don't need to abolish carbon in this country in order to understand that our deadly addiction to it is the principal enemy to America's prosperity, to our leadership, to our national security, to the values that make us proud to be part of this country, to the historic role that my family always believed in of America as an exemplary nation. We do know this, that every nation that has decarbonized its society has experienced instantaneous wealth. Iceland in 1970 was the poorest country in Europe. It was 100% dependent on imported coal and oil. The government of Iceland, mainly because they were frightened of global warming, which impacts the northern latitudes disproportionately, decided to decarbonize their society. But again, you had vested interests in others who tried to hold back and impede that process. But the government moved very deliberately. But during that period, Iceland became 100% energy independent. 95% of Iceland's electric grid now comes from local geothermal. And Iceland went from, during that 15-year period, from being the poorest country in Europe to being the fourth richest country by GDP on Earth. Now, unfortunately for Iceland, they spent virtually all of their newfound wealth on bundled derivatives, and they are again the poorest country in Europe. But their economy is rebounding and will rebound because the fundamentals now are strong. Iceland is one of the world's great energy exporters. They can't run lines across the Atlantic because it's too far. They will be able to, incidentally, very soon, because Great Britain is building under Gordon Brown's plan, these giant wind farms in the North Atlantic, and they're close enough to Iceland that they're going to be able to attach a DC grid line and then sell their energy directly to Europe. And they're going to be very, very wealthy. Well, right now, Iceland imports bauxite from Jamaica, uses the big surplus of geothermal to smelt the bauxite into aluminum, then sells the ingots on the world market, and that's their way of exporting energy. Sweden, in 1996, decided to decarbonize their society and shut down their nuclear power plants. They closed their two biggest nuke plants, slapped a $150-ton tax on carbon, and Sweden's economy since 1996 has grown by 45%, while its energy use has dropped by 9%. Brazil, 20 years ago, decarbonized its transportation grid, and as a direct result of that choice, Brazil, while the entire world economy spiraled and collapsed, Brazil continues to enjoy the longest, most robust economic expansion in the history of Latin America. I was talking to some friends tonight about the fact that Brazil this year will displace France as the fifth richest country on Earth. Costa Rica, at the same time, decarbonized their electric grid, And as a result of that choice, and Costa Rica made some other great choices too, like not having an army. And as a result of that, Costa Rica, which is the smallest country in Central America, is by far the wealthiest. Its economy is larger than most of its neighbors combined. You can go on and on with those examples. But we in our country have much greater geothermal resources than they have in Iceland. My home in Mount Kisco, New York, is powered by geothermal. Virtually every home outside of the major cities in our country could be. But almost nobody uses geothermal because of the illusion that geothermal is more expensive than the incumbents. It isn't. If you added the subsidies, it's far less expensive. But the market, the subsidies have distorted the market and sent the wrong signals to purchasers and consumers, so very few people use geothermal, which is far cheaper than oil and coal, and you know, doesn't get us in wars in the Mideast and doesn't impose all these other costs on our society. We're the number one in the world for wind. The Great Plains states of the Saudi Arabia of wind. We have enough wind. In fact, North Dakota is the windiest place on Earth at sea level. We have enough wind, according to a recent report by the Scientific American, in Montana, North Dakota, and Texas to provide 100% of the energy grid for the U.S. and Canada three times over, even if every American owns an electric car. We're number one or two in the world for solar. The Scientific American report showed that we could power the entire existing U.S. energy grid from an area of the desert southwest that's 75 miles by 75 miles, about 19% of the most barren desert land. I've been privileged to be an advisor to the current administration, the Obama administration, on energy policy. All of the leaders of that administration, Stephen Chu, Ken Salazar, Lisa Jackson, the others, want to transition us to a new energy economy. The barriers are these, and this is the answer to the long answer to your short question. Number one, the unfair advantage that the incumbents have because of the subsidies that are flowing to them, so we're not playing on a level playing field. Obama tried to correct that first by abolishing the subsidies, the direct subsidies, like the oil depletion allowance, which is $35 to $55 billion a year, and the waiver of royalties to the oil industry, and to address the indirect subsidies through the carbon tax and the cap and trade system, and that failed. But even with the subsidies, because of innovation, the cascading innovation that we're seeing in solar and wind, those renewables are now approaching parity with the incumbents, even with the huge advantage, unfair advantage they have in the marketplace. Number two, and this is the most important, we don't have an energy grid in this country that can carry these new currents of energy. Our energy grid is antiquated, it was underbuilt, it is already overpowered, and it's misaligned. It doesn't reach the big wind centers in the Midwest, the solar centers in the desert southwest, and it is dumb. It's a dumb grid, and it's incapable of doing long-haul transmission of energy.
Sometimes I lay under the moon, I thank God I'm breathing, and I pray, don't take me soon, 'cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down, so when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around, because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say, no more, there'll be no more war, and our children will pay. One day,
But now for something completely different.